This is an Easter song.
Do the bunny hop. You never did the bunny hop when you were a kid?
I can chicken dance for you.
Okay.
We never did the bunny hop, though. That's
we'll do that next.
Hey, there's enough of us here to do it.
There is at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you to join the conversation. We have a number of text questions that have come through. We're going to shoot through real quick. And also, again, if you have a plant or insect identification you need some help with, you can always email a picture to info@rosieonthehouse.com. We have author of City Farming, Kari Spencer, and along with farmer Greg of the Urban Farm and John Eisenhower of Integrity Tree Service. Combined knowledge of, I'm going to say, at least 100 years.
I got 40.
Yeah, 30.
I'm not admitting.
There we go.
Okay.
So it's over 100.
It's over 100. And we have, so the first question, where to buy tool to cover peach trees from birds? Question for Farmer Greg.
Yeah, tool, T-U-L-L-E. It's the stuff they make tutus out of. It's a fabric. You buy it at the fabric store.
Yeah, and, you know, it's on sale this time of year because they put it on sale for people to buy for prom dresses and wedding veils.
Oh, yeah.
So those seasons are coming up. It also goes on sale again in the fall around Halloween. So those are good times to buy it.
And if for anyone that missed it, you had mentioned at one point in the broadcast never to use bird netting trees just because of...
It tangles with the trees, mercilessly tangles in the trees. And good luck getting it out. And then it kills birds. I don't know why they would even sell bird netting. It makes no sense to me. But you need something with a smaller hole in it, you know, rather than the bigger holes. And the tool works great.
We had an individual one. We talked about the Bonides burnout weed and grass killer. Can they apply that around a tree well where they've got an invasion going? And as long as you're using that product, Bonide burnout weed and grass killer, yes. It works strictly through the foliage, and just make sure you're not using Bonide's cleanup. That is more into the systemic and will get into the root zone. So just make sure you're buying from a local nursery and you're talking to somebody that knows the products very well.
And follow the label instructions.
Read and follow the label instructions.
Absolutely.
Now, we were talking earlier about soil, and this texter says, I'm in Gilbert, and I want to know how to make soil good for planting a vegetable garden. How do I have to dig out the existing soil? How deep do I go? What do I backfill it with? You were talking about Tank's Green Stuff from Tucson says there's less than 1%
organic matter. Yeah, and there's 1% organic matter in our desert soils, which is crazy low. So really,
which is why only between Phoenix and Blythe, all you see is creosotes.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So are you pitching that question to me?
The panel.
The my solution, if you don't have Bermuda and nutgrass, if you have Bermuda and nutgrass, sorry, you just have to work until you dig it all out. But if you don't have Bermuda and nutgrass, what I do is I'll put down 6 inches of potting mix or planting mix, and we actually have made some up through Tank's Green Stuff down in Tucson called Farmer Greg's Planting Mix. I just add 6 inches to right on the top and plant.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No digging out. Just
no digging.
6 inches and plant on top.
Yep.
We had an area at the micro farm project that we did not have Bermuda grass in, and I just built some wooden frames and filled them up with compost and started planting in that compost, and those gardens worked great for many years.
Oh, yeah.
What happens over time to that ground below it? Does the organic matter, you have to resupply that, I would imagine, regularly.
Yes, organic matter tends to disappear because the microbes and earthworms and other creatures in the soil are coming to the buffet to eat it, right? So if you have a raised bed, for instance, you'll notice that it kind of sinks over time. Mm-hmm. So you do need to replenish it with some compost. But eventually the soil underneath the compost kind of mixes in with the compost. Plant roots grow down into the soil and break it up, and it all becomes just... one entity over time.
So I had this garden bed at the urban farm that I've been gardening for 20 plus years, maybe even almost close to 30 years. And what I do with it every year is I add 6 inches of organic matter right on top, you know, compost, planting mix, that kind of stuff.
6 inches every year for 20 years.
Yep. And well, all right, probably 3 inches every year, but, you know, add organic matter on top of it every year. And what happened over time was it kind of raised up. So 5 years ago, what I did is I dug down below the topsoil to see how deep the topsoil was on there. And where it used to be dirt all the way to the top of the soil, I had 18 inches of growing soil that had accumulated. So what's happening at that interface between the dirt and the organic matter is this amazing soil is being built, and it goes deeper and deeper and deeper over time.
Well, there you go. To our texture and Gilbert, that's a just add to the top and
add to the top.
Every year it'll just get better.
Yep. With the caveat, if you have Bermuda or nutgrass, you have to dig it out.
Which isn't fun.
Yeah, well, no. And it's a process. You know, I've got a whole process. We could do a whole show on Bermuda grass and your garden to, you know, talking about how to get rid of it. But what I've done at the urban farm is I put down concrete walls 16 inches down, and the Bermuda grass lives on the grass side, and my gardens are Bermuda grass free. So I call them weed walls.
Well, there's the Back to Eden video has some really great tips on how to convert a lawn area to a planting area by laying down. They have a process of laying down newspapers, which they cover with compost, another layer of newspapers covered mm-hmm. with compost, which blocks the sunlight to the grass. So for the first year, you might want to try to do a kill of your of that zone. And then you can have a little bit better head start on trying to convert it without going through the lengthy process of actually trying to, you know, root it out. Bermuda, nutgrass, pretty tough to do that on. But if you're trying to convert, that might be a way to start by doing a solarization in the area, actually blocking the sunlight to it so it's going to kill it. And then you can come back in a few years later and try to work that soil a little more easily. Because you've killed a lot of the root activity.
I think that Bermuda and nutgrass is going to be here after the nuclear holocaust. I have honestly,
the plant world.
in 30 plus years of dealing with it, I've never seen sheet mulching. They call that sheet mulching over the top kill Bermuda nutgrass. It's you got to dig it out.
I don't know.
And then it's a matter of then where does that dirt go? Because you've got this.
Oh
dirt
no,
full.
You don't dig out the dirt. You just dig out the grass.
You can turn it up and sift it out and find the roots and pull those guys out and return the dirt to your garden.
Yeah,
no, I'm calling the backhoe. Just scrape it, put it in the dump truck and go. I'm not sifting through and pulling out
that works too.
Weed root.
One of the things that I've done in the past that works really well is I use a sod cutter. I'll water the garden or water the lawn really well. I'll go in with a sod cutter, take off the top 1.5 inches. That gets rid of, in most cases, 95%+ of the grass that's there. And then you just have to dig out a little bit.
You got to stay on top of it, though.
You do have to stay on top of it. I have a zero tolerance. Yeah, no pun intended. I have a zero tolerance for Bermuda in my garden.
We had Jim that called in and didn't have time to hang on the line, but wants to know about putting woody mulch around a tree. His 6-inch, I guess he just needs a little bit more information looking at it. How far out?
6 foot diameter.
Around the
minimum.
Tree you go?
And usually what I do with the fruit trees is I put them on a mound in the middle so that they kind of come up a little bit. But you don't really want that woody mulch up against the trunk. So, you know, a couple inches away from the trunk, you can, you know, put bricks around it or something. But and the truth of the matter is that here in the dry desert, it's not that big of a deal to have woody mulch up against the trunk, but I still would, you know, I still kind of keep it away.
When we have a row of ash trees on the north side of our house, and I had put woody mulch along, and John, you came out, and the first thing you did when you got there is went right to those ash trees and started scraping all the dirt away from the trunk. He's like,
yep.
Don't ever do this.
Yeah.
And the secret, you know, Greg's mentioning woody mulch. You know, the coarser textured mulch is a lot easier to manage. When you have the fine textured mulch or mulch that has a lot of fines in it, those fines will have a tendency to migrate to the lowest spot,
mm-hmm.
often around the trunk of the trees. And then those fines or any dirt that's up against the trunk of the tree wicks moisture up against the trunk. And if it's held there, it can begin to attack the cambium and destroy the tree. So we've had more trees that have died from soil above the root collar. So where the trunk begins to flare out and become root tissue, that should always be kept high and dry above mm-hmm. the soil level. And so if you're going to mulch around your trees, keep that a safe distance away from the trunk of the trees to prevent that that wicking of moisture up against the trunk tissue. The roots can handle water. The trunk needs to be dry.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sticking by that story.
Yeah, I'm fully in on that one.
Now, Kari, I was going to wait till after I got a chance to read your book to bring you in, but as I mentioned at the beginning of the broadcast, our guest that was coming in for today had a scheduling conflict. We didn't realize it was Easter weekend when we scheduled it, and so we went to our go-to people for gardening and landscaping and outdoor living, and Greg said, well, I want to bring in Kari, and I said, well, I kind of cringed because I really wanted to read your book before I brought you in again.
Well, we can bring her back. You can read the book, and we can talk about it a little bit.
Give her a full hour.
Yeah.
But tell me about this book a little bit. I'm starting at chapter one, Easy Peasy.
Yeah. Well, city farming is, like I mentioned, it's about growing food and raising livestock in urban spaces and making it really easy for the farmer, which you are a farmer if you're growing food, even if it's in the city in your backyard, and making it as productive as it possibly can be. And when my husband and I started our urban farming adventures, we didn't have much direction at all. There just wasn't much information out there. Fortunately, I met Greg and I learned a lot from him. But, you know, I really wished that I had something that I could read that would just tell me, how do you do this? How do you start this urban farm? And how do you keep it running? And how do you keep it from overtaking your life and your pocketbook and have a lot of fun with it? So I wrote this book as kind of the manual that I wish that I had when we started this lifestyle. And, you know, it covers all of the basics of urban farming, mostly a lot about growing food, but also some about animals, because we had wonderful adventures with goats and turkeys and chickens and other things.
Rabbits,
as well.
Other
quail. And so I put all of that, as much of that knowledge into the book as I could, and there's a connected website as well. So there are links with QR codes that you can scan that will take you right out to more information on the web. And really anything that you want to know about growing food is, you know, in this book.
And just a note to save myself some time next week, when you had mentioned quail, this isn't something you go trap live. I know that Game and Fish is listening, and there's a lot of people.
No.
This is something you order. I mean, it's amazing what you can order through a catalog. You can get, like, a Privet Hatchery catalog and order quail that are a day old that are –
absolutely.
Raised
or
and
you
hatched.
Can get them at many of the pet stores and nurseries as well. We're talking about Coturnix quail or Japanese quail, which are adapted to create these beautiful, enormous eggs. The birds are tiny. They hardly eat anything. And they create an egg that's like 20 to 25% of their body weight every single day. It's really
that's amazing.
It's amazing. They're like these little egg factories. See, if you can't have chickens in your backyard, you could have a little mini egg farm if you have some quail.
And the breed of that?
Coturnix, C-O-T-U-R-N-I-X, or Japanese quail if you want to Google it.
I can remember Japanese quail a little bit easier than that. Well, if you are in your backyard and you're fighting something that's eating any of your hard-worn vegetables, because that will happen. You start planting and everything's going to come. Insects, dogs, we were talking earlier, there's a caller with Phoenix. Well, Captain Jack's doesn't help against dogs. That doesn't help. But if you've got something that crawls and is eating, Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew from Bonide is all organic, and it's so safe you can apply it straight to your produce the same day you harvest it. Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew is a liquid application. You just hook up to your hose and spray directly to the areas you see the insects invading, and it'll last up to 30 days. You can find Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew all over the state, including if you're in the White Mountains, Christopher's Garden Center in Lakeside, if you're in Tucson, Savanos, and if you're in Mesa, you can get it at Summerwind's Nurseries. That's Bonide's Captain Jack Dead Bug Brew, proudly made in America.